This is The Running Channel Meets, a brand new podcast from the Running Channel team where Rick, Sarah, or myself, in some combination, are going to be speaking to some incredible people in the world of running, but people that you might not expect, people whose stories you might not have heard, or definitely not in the context that we're going to tell them. And today we're welcoming our first guest, Colin Jackson. And we're not going to be talking about the four Olympic Games that he went to.
We're not?
No, we're not going to talk about the world record that he held.
Are we not?
Nope, we're not going to talk about the unbeaten streak at European Championships that spanned 12 years.
Nobody told me this.
Okay, well, we're going to be talking about something way more important, and that's why this podcast is going to be different. We're going to be talking about what happened to him after retirement.
And specifically, how a different type of running helped him with crippling panic attacks. Colin Jackson, welcome to the Running Channel Meets.
Thank you very much.
Okay, it's me who's the odd one out today. Four-time Olympian, two-time Olympian, and I've got a hot
Rick.
Tub. I've got a hot tub in my back garden. We're going to get onto that later. Good to have you, Colin.
It's a real pleasure to be here. And I actually found my way here. Well, we won't tell them exactly how I found my way here, but I did find my way here.
Yeah, down into the warren of the Running Channel Studios.
We were just so happy that you agreed to come on because obviously, there's so much to talk about with your career, but one element is what happened after your career. And it's something that you really have opened up about and how you had these panic attacks and how things didn't exactly go to plan for you as soon as you stopped running.
Yeah, I think one of the things when you're, and I want to use the word a star in our sport of athletics, is that people always tend to feel that everything goes flawlessly from here on in. You know, you must have a life that is paved with gold. You know, everywhere you go, people are throwing petals in front of you. As it was when I was running. But
Well, I remember you're my like that first memory of the Olympics in, you know, 92. And I know you won a medal in 1988 as well. So it's, you were smashing it and a real like golden era for athletics. But then you stop running and it's not the same.
Yeah, no, definitely not. And when you actually do stop, the first thing you've got to realize, I think one of the things for me, Andy, is I was pretty young when I started. So I had success from the age of 18, you know,
Olympic silver at 20.
At 21, I had 20. Olympic silver. Yeah. World bronze at 20.
Yeah.
I was European indoor champion, blah, 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 all that stuff by the age of 21. So I'd won all the major medals by the age of 21. So I was kind of used to a one particular type of lifestyle, you know. But all of a sudden, when that door's closed on you and you've got to look elsewhere, it was daunting because A, I didn't know what I was capable of doing because I never had to test myself. And then secondly, I remember thinking to myself, well, I'm 36 when I retired. And I remember thinking, 36. And in that year, that time, I've done 18 years in school and 18 years as an athlete. If I live another 36 years, what the hell am I going to, how am I going to fill that void? Because they are huge parts of your life, you know, your first bit of education and your first career. And I literally plummeted into the most, I want to use the word on reflection, tragic form of anxiety because I was having panic attacks on a regular basis. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was frustrated. I was irritated. But I must admit, at no stage did I think about going back to track and field because that was a place of safety.
Yeah.
That never came into my mind.
During the last few years of competing until you were 36, had you thought about what you would do on that day when you kind of, when you stopped? Or was that what introduced the anxiety attacks when you did stop?
Well, what happened? My coach and many people in the sporting world, certainly in athletics, would have heard of Malcolm Arnold as my coach all the way through my career. And Malcolm would literally stop me from talking about retirement whilst I was training, thinking, oh, I'm going to retire in 2 years, because that was my plan. I was always had a plan to retire. But he was like, if you keep talking about it, that means you're there already, so you might as well just retire today. So at the end, I was really packing it into the back of my mind.
And then you just stop, and then you're like, what
literally,
now?
Yeah, because I had no plan. Yeah. I had zero plan to do that. And you know, you'll have people around you, but the people who are around you, your friends, your family, they're kind of in their own little life already. Right? They have no idea what you're going through in that sense. And unless you're capable of opening up and talking, you're going to be in big trouble.
Yeah, you say you retired at 36. I mean, you still only look 38, Colin. So, you know, and I thought it was me who spent all the money on the skin caviar.
Yeah, that's...
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. So he looks younger than I look.
Yeah. I've got to go from musing to kind of zoning in though. Like, yeah. Talk me through like what happened when a panic attack actually came on. Like, what happens to your body?
The first thing that happened for me specifically is like you could start to feel it coming on because you start to get a little bit heated inside. Mm. Your heart rate goes through the roof, and it generally feels like I've not had a heart attack, but I can't imagine it being more intense. Your chest is so tight. You start to sweat a lot. I mean, really sweat a lot. And these waves of what am I doing? I can't do. Sometimes there were stages where I didn't know where I was. Mm. It was bizarre. And I remember sitting in my mum and dad's house and streaming with sweat. My chest was tight and you can hardly breathe. That's why I kind of say I liken it to a heart attack, yeah, without the physical pain, as, yeah, I can imagine. But you do have a tight chest and your heart is continuously racing. And you have, and this is the worst thing, you don't have any control.
Really?
You couldn't bring yourself out of
you
it.
You can't.
You just got to wait
for
it to
no
stop.
Control. You've got to try. And I remember one day I was sitting there, my mum was just trying to tell me, just be calm. Just stay calm. And there's nothing you could do because when you're trying to stay calm, yeah, it ain't working because it's even worse, yes, you know, yeah, because you could feel this going on. And it's a sense of being suffocated as well because everything is tight and closed.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
How long would each one last?
It could vary. You know, sometimes I could have it for, and seriously, I mean, a good 20 minutes.
Wow.
A good 20 minutes of the intense emotion and feeling.
Yeah.
And then it takes a bit of time for it to really, really fade away. So it doesn't just come and go in that, yeah, sense, you know?
So you've still got that aftermath once,
absolutely,
it finishes.
Absolutely. And you're exhausted.
Yeah.
Because everything's been working so fast.
Yeah, it's a full physiological response. Yeah. It's not just like, yeah, a little bit of a mental,
yeah,
thing. It's, no, it's your whole body's response, yeah, to it. Did, yeah, you ever have any anxiety at all? Not necessarily panic attacks, but were you ever anxious or nervous, you know, for the world championship final or the Olympics or anything like that through your career? Or was it the first time you'd experienced it as a 36-year-old retired athlete?
Yeah, that's a great question because, to be honest, no. I was always prepared for major championships and preparation always gave me confidence. Mm. This was something that was a complete sideswipe for me.
It was foreign,
yeah,
to your body.
Yeah, completely. And I was not able in my mind to deal with it. I could deal with every other situation, it seems. Pressure, yeah, you know, expectation. That's very different to something that is completely physically out of your control.
Yeah, and what's interesting, I think, is that this like, you can be, I imagine you consider yourself to be incredibly mentally tough, mm, as an athlete, mm, right? Like you're dealing with being in a stadium of 60,000 people, mm, the expectation that you're world record holder and all, mm-hmm, that sort of stuff, mm-hmm, that would crush a lot of people. Mm. So you have that sense of self where you're like, I'm mentally tough.
Yeah.
But then that doesn't mean that you still can't experience anxiety or, you know, for other people that might be depression or whatever it might be.
Yeah, no, you're spot on again because I think, you know, when you're in good practice of one type of mental stress and strain. Mm. So I was very well rehearsed in going into major stadiums, looking around, dealing with your heart rate, lifting, but in a controlled manner.
Mm. It's adrenaline rather than anxiety.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And that's something that you're used to, even from your school days. Because I used to say to people, you know, going into a world Olympic final is no different to lining up when you did your first sports day. And when you get on that line, your first sports day, as a kid, your heart is racing, yeah, you're nervous. Yeah. And I say emotions, you can't really crank up. So I can't go onto the track and go, right, this is an Olympic final, I need to race my game. Yeah. It just happens, you know, because you are there.
Yeah.
So that was what I was saying, that it's that controllability that you have as an athlete that you don't have when you have anxiety attacks.
Yeah, I wondered whether it's, though. So I remember really distinctly watching you on TV and this very repeatable, identical routine that you did to get into the blocks. Like it was a really, I mean, I don't have the flexibility to do any of the things that you did to get into the blocks. But I remember watching that for 10 years and it didn't change.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's one small part of your really controllable routine that you just do it by rote and then you're like, you're in the blocks and then bang, you're off on the start line.
Yeah.
and then you stop competing and you don't have any routine? Do you think that played into the...
Well, it was, I think it's a sense of also, I don't want to use the word dismissed because that sounds really brutal. But I remember when I wanted, because I still love training.
Yeah.
All right. And I wanted to train still. The only thing I didn't want to do is compete, right? That's the thing I didn't want to do. And I remember saying to my coach, oh, so is everybody training Monday? Because I'll just come down. And he's like, no, you're not coming down. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, no, no, you're not coming. You're gone, you're gone. Get away from me. I was like, is he serious? Mm. And he was like, no, no, you're going to be a disruptive factor in the group. Because if you haven't got the same aspirations as everybody else, like, you are just going to be in big, big trouble, influencing them in a negative way.
Yeah.
And I kind of got what he meant. Because, you know, when you're doing reps upon reps upon reps, and then you realize, I don't need to do the next three because I've retired.
Yeah.
And I could see how that can knock on through the other athletes who would potentially be alongside you. So I get him.
Yeah, I've experienced that stopping. As soon as I stopped trying to compete at the best level, even now for the Running Channel, we'll do a challenge. And the thing that I don't have anymore to the same degree is that willingness to really hurt myself.
Yes.
Because I'm like, why? What's the point anymore?
You've got your medals there. Yeah. You've got your performances. You've got everything in your background. So like, who are you trying to get?
But at the same time, the people I spent the most time with and that my support network, my friends for 10 years was the training group. So then all of a sudden they're not there.
Exactly. And that is where I felt like all of a sudden... isolated. And when you're told you can't come back again, then it means like, well, you can't come back.
So that played into it.
So that kind of takes everything off you as well. And that was something that, you know, you have to find your own way again.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any real guidance in finding me or what I was going to do or where I was going to go. So that in itself was kind of challenging.
Yeah. So you've spent all these years, you know, on the track, working out, training, running at such a high level. And then you've got to switch the type of exercise that you do. So you go from, you know, 110 meters or 60 meters, and you all of a sudden you're going, well, actually, I'm going to be doing a different form of sport now. How did that help with the panic attacks?
First of all, I really resented working out.
Really?
Not as in running or doing any exercise?
Anything.
As in strength and conditioning?
Anything. I really, really resented it. I was like, I spent the whole of my life doing this, getting myself and keeping myself in this tip-top shape, dieting all the time, everything. Now, I'm not going to do anything. And that's what I did. I literally just did nothing whatsoever. And then I met, well, still keeping up with some of my friends who were in Switzerland at the time, and they said, oh, come skiing with us in the winter. And I was like, well, I've never skied in my life.
Yeah, because you were too...
Just come skiing.
Yeah, couldn't get insurance. Yeah.
What do you mean, just come skiing? We'll teach you. And literally, they taught me how to ski. And I had then this real new love of getting out into the mountains and breathing fresh air, you know, and just enjoying, again, learning something new, learning something technical, and so I could put my mind back in.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you feel that? Because you, at that point, if you were to go into running in any form, you're going to be so much slower than you were previously.
Yeah.
And so you lost that ability to every week see a little bit of improvement.
Yeah.
That's like a real, it was always motivating for me.
Exactly. And so taking up a winter sport and something that I'd never tried before, because you see quite quick improvement. Yeah. And you like that feeling. Everybody, you know, likes the feeling of doing something a little bit better. I can remember doing my first turn and then do my first bit of parallel turning and then dealing with the moguls, do my first jump. I remember them all.
Yeah.
And it was just fantastic. And it brought a smile back onto my face, to be honest. And I think that's when, once it brought the smile back on my face, then I was like, how can I get a bit better at this?
Yeah.
And the first thing my mates read was like, you need to get your quad strength back up. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
really.
Then you're like, okay, I need to go to the gym. And so then you get a purpose again.
Yeah.
And I think that is one of the key things when you're trying to just keep yourself from DJ. The reasons, why am I doing it? So my purpose was initially to get in shape for skiing. Yeah. And then that's how it just continued.
Did you find, I think when I stopped running, stopped trying to be a professional athlete and then went into the real world, I guess. Like the thing that I, and still now that I battle with, I would say, is that I used to wake up every day with a singular purpose of like, everything that I do today is about getting faster at this one thing.
Yeah.
And then now I'm like, well, I've got lots of little things to do.
Yeah.
But none of them are focused on one singular. And I still don't know what, like, that's still, from a motivational perspective, I find that hard.
It was difficult for me to adjust that scenario that you've just mentioned, because one of the things that we do as athletes, you do that one single focus and you do it to the maximum. Mm. What I realised in the real world, a real we'll kind of describe it. Yeah. I can't really say that I really live in the real world, even about, you know. But let's say I live in the real world. Yeah, everybody's like, you don't live in the real world. Well, but let's say in the new world.
You're drinking a coconut-infused coffee.
Oh, yeah, you did tell us what you... everyone listening, it was a very pretentious coffee being drunk right now.
So I can't really say I'm in the real world, right? So let's say I'm in the world, right? I realized, and I'm giggling while I'm saying this, is that you can't do what we did. You can't work to maximal for everything. You got to work like at 60%. And 60% of all the stuff we do is still most probably higher than most people, because they've never been in a scenario where they're going to be judged the way we are judged.
Yeah, you've got, so for you, less than 13 seconds once a year.
There you go.
That's like,
it.
Yeah, it's nuts.
That's it. Right. And also, you know, most of the people I work alongside, I shouldn't say most of the people I work alongside, in certain territories where I'm working in, none of them have been the world's best.
Mm.
When you've been the world's best, everything else and anything else is second best. So it doesn't matter what I put my mind to in that sense, it can never be up there, because I can never say that I'm the world's best at anything again. So I'm happy to work as hard as I can to a particular level, but I realize you cannot work 100% maximal on all the projects that I work, literally, otherwise I wouldn't sleep.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't be talking to me.
Well, and do you, so now I guess you don't, so to give people a view of elite track and field, at that level, we would have been called the joggers. By anyone that was running more than 800 meters and above was a jogger in the eyes of, but, you know, people like yourself. I don't know whether you ever said that, but I was definitely, and it was quite a term of endearment. Like, I quite enjoyed that. So I had a good banter with the guys on the team.
Yeah.
But that meant that anyone that was running, say, the 110 hurdles or even the 400 meter guys, that you would never go for a jog. Like that.
Goodness gracious.
You'd warm up in any way other than an aerobic kind of like exercise. But now you must, like, you know, you can't sprint flat out and jump over hurdles that are like almost as high as your head. So. Because actually, Rick, have you ever stood next to the men's 110 hurdles height?
Yeah, I just walk straight under them.
They're so high.
I agree now. When I go and walk past the hurdles, I look at them and go,
did I jump them?
No way. Yeah. That's what I was saying. And I'm checking the height myself. And the gap in between seems monstrous.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, you can't put three strides in between.
Exactly, it was three strides before three strides.
You're like, you can't do that. That's impossible. And so, yeah, you kind of get a little bit...
But are you doing normal running, jogging now?
Like, I have to. I guess
what keeps you going. Right?
I would say I have to. And I don't want to say that in a way that is a painful thing, because I don't think it's painful at all.
Sometimes you don't want to go out though.
No,
that's normal.
It's something that I'm lucky where I live, because I live and it's flat. So that's good. Perfect. On the coast. So I have a scenic route. I've got a little bit of hills if I want to go up, so I can get a climb to about, I don't know, 90 meters elevation, which is decent when you're just going to go, right? But also, because I had this new, I guess, found running 5 and 6K. Yeah. So I have a 6K loop, really, because I don't want to do 5K. And I wasn't doing 10. So,
but 6K ticks the box.
6K just seems
should be a new
right,
race, though.
Right?
Yeah. The Colin Jackson.
Right. Colin 6, right?
The Colin 6.
And I realised how liberating it was, because it reminded me of being up in the mountains.
Right.
So when you have that sense of freedom. And nobody's bothering you, you can't have your phone. You know, you're just doing this one thing. And you can be at one with yourself, from listening to your breathing. How am I feeling today? Oh, my breathing may be a little bit shallow. We can shorten and make that a little bit deeper, make it a little bit longer, and just let your mind drift on other things and not worry about other stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just, the run is just long enough, I wouldn't. You wouldn't even describe it as running what I do.
Oh, we absolutely would. There is anyone who laces up and gets out there for a run is a runner. So, yeah, 100%.
So that's why I kind of enjoy kind of running to that way, and I enjoy it, and I generally just do enjoy.
Was that part of it, Colin, that helped get you out of that spiral?
Again, because it clears your mind, and I think that's what you need. Because what I was doing, spending too much time worrying. And that worrying created anxiety. And people would go, what are you worried for? You got, well, here we go. Why are you worrying, Colin? You got good looks. Yes, boys, you can say yeah.
Absolutely, Colin. Yeah, you're an incredibly good looking man.
You got a career, you got great friends, family, you got everything that you need. You got money in the bank, you got everything that you need. So what's your anxiety? Your anxiety comes from loads of different things.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's like,
what next?
It could be, what next? I would say, where am I sitting now? Oh, suppose everything stopped tomorrow. Mm. What am I going to do with my time? Can I fill my time? You know, what am I bringing to the world?
It's because you go to the worst. Things. You always go to the worst point.
Always.
And you have those thoughts, don't you, often in the middle of the night.
Absolutely.
And when you wake up in the morning, a lot of the real darkness and those thoughts...
It's carried with you.
Disappears.
Yeah, well,
some stays, but,
yeah,
but,
some
but
and you can just do something to change that, you know? Yeah. And so you've got to learn some type of coping mechanism that will allow you to do that. I did that. I put my fingers out then to do inverted commas. And you won't be able to see that. I was doing that.
Do you feel guilty a little bit as well? Because like you said, you had everything from the outside perspective and you think to yourself, well, I'm not anxious enough, or I'm not depressed enough, or I'm not this enough to talk to someone else about it. You know that people are worse off than you.
Oh, big time. Yeah. Lots. I mean, I have friends who are worse off than me on so many.
But that doesn't diminish how you're feeling in that moment.
Exactly. And also what is really sometimes difficult, if you have some close friends and you want to talk to your close friends about it, when you know what they're going through, then you go, well, hang on a minute. Life isn't so bad.
Yeah.
And also, you've got to be careful you don't end up, and I use this, run into a little bit of competition. And when I say competition, it's like, well, my life is worse than yours, you know.
Oh, I see.
You know, that kind of thing where you
victim
kind of...
competition.
Exactly. And you don't, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, just because I'm worrying about the next job I'm going to get, it doesn't mean that it's any less a concern than you worrying about anything that you got. Oh, I've got to put four car tires on. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Whatever it is.
Completely.
It's yours.
Yeah, it's impossible to be in someone else's head. And therefore, it's not, you can't, and I've learned this, be dismissive of either your own emotions or mental health or someone else's, even if you think, you know, that they're all switched on and so on. Like, I wondered whether, how you might describe yourself now and whether what I struggled with is that sense of identity and what gave me, I suppose, mental health struggles is that when I stopped running, I wasn't a runner anymore.
Yeah.
And then when you meet someone and before you've decided what you're going to do next, you're like, hey, Colin, great to meet you. I'm Andy. I'm nothing at all. I don't.
You're my annoying boss.
Yeah. But do you know what's interesting?
Well, that is true.
Do you know what used to come to me when that experience where you say to me? Because you know when we were runners, right?
Yeah.
And you go to the US, you have to sign the immigration forms at the time, and it'd say occupation. You could always put sportsman. Mm. But then it was a time when you retired.
You're like, what am I like, now? Like, just man?
Disneyland fanatic?
Literally, what do I put in? Yeah. And for the first 18 months, I generally struggled to say what I actually did. And I thought, well, do you know what? Just put media.
Yeah.
And that's all I just shoved in that box. Yeah. And then, you know. And if people say to me, what do you do in the media? I'd be like, lots of things. Well, what the hell does that mean?
To be honest here, on customs decorations, you want to give yourself the most boring job. If you put wine connoisseur, you're going to be asked a lot of questions. Just put sales. Sales. I always put sales.
I hadn't ever done anything wrong. But the moment that you step up and they do your fingerprints and then they start asking you questions, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And I remember at one point saying something and it just wasn't true. And I was like, what are you doing? Why are you genuinely unlike you? Yeah. I was under pressure and I started, I'm doing this. Why are you talking? Why have you said that now? And then I had to kind of try and stick with it wasn't a big lie. Please don't come and arrest me.
Your story. Yeah. What is my story?
I think I remember saying I was a student. When I wasn't a student anymore. And as soon as I said it, I was like, what?
Why did I say that?
Yeah. I was going to be in some kind of trouble. But yeah, I really struggled with this idea of stopping running and then having that description. And now I'd be quite comfortable. Like I'm a dad. I'm a husband. Mm, yeah. I'm a son. I'm a member of a media publisher. Like I know what my role is. And that's like each of those is an element of my life. Whereas previously is that 100% of my description.
It's like, an extra, it's like an extra arm or an extra leg. It's part of your body. So we talked a lot about, you know, how it's been for you, how you kind of got over that. One thing we haven't touched much on is recovery now and recovery then and how your body changes.
He's only 38, like you said.
Well, I know, exactly, yeah. So you're still recovering quick, Colin, to be fair. But what do you do now with recovery? Like how do you work that into your routine now?
Do you know what? I'll be honest. Because I coach again now, I'm back so I'm back into athletics in a way. I mean, I still am also the director of the Wings for Life World Run. So I was an international sport director. I look after that because Wings for Life, the foundation, is based in Austria. It's Red Bull's sole charity. So I'm kind of involved in running anyway.
Andy and I did it last year.
We hosted the event at Battersea Park in London. And we've hosted our own, even during lockdown, when they couldn't run it. We hosted our own like mock-up where we had someone on a bike chasing us down. Because basically there's no finish line, right?
That's right.
And people are running for those who can't. So it's to raise money for...
spinal cord injury research.
No finishing line thing, I've got to say, it took me a few hours to get it. I was still going on the Tuesday.
Any listeners to the Running Channel podcast won't be too surprised that this was a concept too far from Rip.
You could have just walked it. I always have to walk it until the car catches
you. But you keep going until the car sets off half an hour after you. Either virtually in the app or in a real life event. And it's a pretty cool concept, but very difficult to motivate yourself for because you could just stop.
Yeah, exactly. And I just say to people, do you know what? You're donating to a good cause. That's what you're actually doing. And that's what we're asking you to do. Get up and get out and do something. Yeah. And if it's that walk, just do a walk.
Yeah.
If you've got friends and you want to challenge yourself, just to see how far you can run, jump in.
Yeah.
You know, you've got your time, just keep running. So it's a lot of fun to be involved in. So, you know, I'm still very much involved in running. And because you're involved in it, you kind of get a little bit of tips of the modern days of doing things.
Interesting.
If you know what I mean.
How's that changed since Seoul 1988, your first Olympics?
I call it prehistoric athletics. Okay, we can say that happily, prehistoric athletics. Loads of things. I mean, so much. As soon as you finish, what fuel you should be taking in, you know, straight away, as quickly as you possibly can. What fuel we take? We didn't take any fuel in, you know. I remember when you used to go into doping, they were giving you beer. Doesn't work that way.
In doping control. I did once get given beer in a German anti-doping thing. They were much more laid back.
If I'd have known this, I would have tried a bit harder at school.
Yeah, and it wasn't alcohol-free beer back in those days. It was beer. So, you know, things have changed nutritionally in that sense to try and get athletes out there recovering. Of course, also, as we know, products have changed a lot as well, which certainly help a lot of athletes in that sense in recovery. But also, this, you know, the cold stuff that people talk about. Make sure you get that cold bath.
And you're into your spas now, I understand.
You've got
your own model, basically, haven't you?
I love it. The Contra Spa, right? I just say, that's the most interested he's been in this conversation.
Oh, yeah. He's really pumped up. When we were talking about running and the Olympics, he switched off.
No joke.
As soon as we're talking about hot tubs, he's in.
He was in, right?
Well, you are talking to someone who had a hot tub craned over his house into his back garden, so he's
okay.
I've got four ears at this point.
Okay, all right. Well, listen, with at least one set, right? With Contra Spa there, and what will they do with Contra Spa? It's kind of like, can you imagine the yin yang kind of symbol, right? Yeah. If you can picture that,
right,
as two meters circumference, right? I say 2 meters diameter because it's this long, right? So it's 2 meters diameter. And if you think of the yin yang symbol, one side is cold, one side is hot. So it goes down to +7 degrees Celsius. And you can step in there, dive up to your chest, up to there.
That sounds cold.
It is pretty cold. I've been in it. Trust me, it's cold, right? And you stay in there. I mean, I used to stay in just like a medium-ish kind of cold bath after I used to race.
So I used to set
the bath before I left, so it was reasonably cold, and the ambient temperature would take it down to about 13, 14 in your room anyway, which is okay.
Yeah.
But it's not as cold as these tubs, right? And we know the colder you can deal with is the better in that sense. Get out of there after spending 5 minutes, go into the hot side of it, you warm up so beautifully well. I mean, your skin kind of knows it's alive when you go
now
from
now you're talking about hot tubs and skincare. You've got Rick,
all in one, right?
This is Rick's
I think
heaven.
I'm going to move in.
Then you step in. But I always remind people, the biggest benefit you get then is to go back into the cold after you come out.
Yeah,
that's the bit that really... And to be honest, people go, I'm not going back in. But when you go back in, it feels a lot warmer than it did when you first went in.
Yeah.
So having that contra flow, of course, just allows your body to help it repair, anti-inflammatory, et cetera, et cetera. It's absolutely a brilliant concept and it works. And it looks beautiful because it's stainless steel.
2008 to 2012 was when I ran those two Olympics. And between rounds, we'd be hopping into an ice bath for recovery. And that was just a wheelie bin.
Was it actually a wheelie bin?
100%. And this is like Team GB Olympics. It was a wheelie bin.
Well, they brought a wheelie bin to the track. To China.
The track and just
So
stuffed it with ice and water, Beijing. Right?
Yeah.
They just brought wheelie bins.
On our warm-up, we did like a
whole... Hertfordshire County Council just shipped them
they
over to
genuine,
Beijing.
They were green wheelie bins with the lids flipped back because they're about the right height to stand in it and it takes you up to your like stomach.
Yeah.
And they're full of water and they're just pouring.
I really hope it was the recycling or the garden waste.
I think it was a fresh one. I don't think it was my food waste bin.
Not the food waste one.
Yeah, it was a little bit bigger than that one, yeah.
Saying that, if you smell a bit fishy on the track, you might run a bit further.
Oh,
that might have helped you.
It's a comedy.
Were you knocked that Aussie guy over in 2012? Oh. Sorry.
No, 2006 Commonwealth Games. Oh, it's fine. You don't mind bringing me back.
They all merge into one by 2018.
You don't mind bringing me back to the low points of my career. Yeah. Thanks very much. Broke a wrist. Knocked down the favourite in the Commonwealth Games.
Oh,
got booed by 93,000 people. But let's talk about it.
93,000 people.
Have you ever been booed?
How many thousand?
93,000.
Have you ever been booed by 93,000 people, Colin?
I've been cheered by.
Oh, no.
Booed by 93,000 because he knocked down the home Aussie favourite. I was watching it on telly in Ipswich and I could hear them from Australia.
I still have nightmares, but by all means keep bringing it up. It's absolutely fine.
Yeah, we talk about anxiety and look what he's doing to you.
Life.
Oh, yeah. Incredible.
He's got a strong barrier now.
We need to put in place some boundaries, Rick, and not cross them.
There you go.
Until we share a hot tub again soon.
There we go.
There you go. Okay. Yeah.
Or maybe all three of us at this rate.
Yeah. Oh, this has been incredible. I'm so grateful that you have spoken so openly about something. And I hope that anybody who is listening, who's had a similar experience, obviously world champion, world record holder, four-time Olympian, experienced the same things that plenty of people out there experience, like a lack of identity, perhaps some... You know, these panic attacks that were crippling and you didn't know how to deal with them. It can happen to anybody. So if you haven't already, go speak to somebody. If you know somebody this might have affected, then speak to them. Mm-hmm. Encourage them to speak to people. Mm-hmm. And let us know how you're getting on at podcast@therunningchannel.com.
And if all that doesn't work, just pop round to Colin's, knock on his door and say, is your hot tub open?
Job done.
Colin, thank you.
If I was home, that was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot, guys.